six drinks. But I think I think what's interesting is I actually see hope now, and I was almost not going to come to this. I didn't think anybody would really be interested in hearing me again, and I was also Monday when I go back, I've got to get all my furniture out of my office because we found someone to rent it. But I think at the end of the day, we have to decide whether we're here in the moment and trying to help each other, or whether we're just going to be tuned out. And I'm not preaching to you, because believe me, it'll be a year or two before I'm certain that I'm not drinking as a matter of routine. But I think I was doing more damage through neglect to my family and stuff like that than good. And now also I'm feeling stronger. I mean, you know, for you puppies in the audience that are under 55, everything up to 55 is training wheels. You're only an adult after 55. And I figured that out when I turned 50, and I looked around and there was Brent Scowcroft still going strong. Oh, shit, I'm still a baby. Anyway, life is good. So, questions on substance? Yes, sir. Please go. Where's the microphone?
There are two microphones.
Oh, there are two microphones. Okay.
Earlier you mentioned a national security study memorandum 200, the Henry...
2000.
Oh, 2000. Okay. Totally different then. Okay.
It was 2000. Okay, go ahead.
This one. Why do you think there are still some 9/11 conspirators that say that 9/11 was an inside job? Like, what do you think needs to happen before... Or is it even possible for people to just let that go? And
well, no, it's not possible to let it go because there's too much there to let go. I have read and reviewed most of the books and most of the DVDs on 9/11, and I am persuaded that 9/11 was, at a minimum, let it happen. I believe that this plot was hatched by bin Laden and elements of the Pakistani intelligence service that are extremely radical. Now, Pakistani intelligence service is basically like three different slices. There's the really wild-ass Islamic Jihad slice, and then there's the pro-Western slice, and then there's the middle kind of ground. You know, Pakistan is an independent Islamic nation that'll do whatever it takes. But the Pakistanis are not stupid, so when the Western side of the Pakistani intelligence service got wind of the extremist side of the Pakistani intelligence service and what they were doing, they came and blew the whistle. And my reading tells me that no fewer than nine nations told the United States in advance that this was going to happen. The Israelis even sent the video crew in advance to position itself so as to be able to take pictures. At the same time, I believe the Mossad told Larry Silverstein that this was going to happen. Now, Silverstein had a real asbestos problem. It was one he couldn't afford to fix. And this must have been a gift from heaven, because among other things, in cahoots with the Bush family member that ran the security company, they basically closed down all the cameras for weekend. The videotapes are there on all the dust, the residual dust and everything. The thermite evidence is there. I think they installed controlled demolitions in all three buildings. And the Pentagon, I think it was a missile. Major General Siglob is on record, on TV, as saying, Siglob was the guy in charge of all Soviet imagery analysis. He says this was a missile. And if you look at the early pictures, it's actually a hole up here. It's not until later that the stuff collapses. And there's no video evidence and whatever. I will come back to JFK by saying that we now have a book called Someone Would Have Talked, which establishes to my satisfaction that JFK was killed by Cuban exiles using CIA training and CIA sniper equipment that they were given to take Castro out. And they chose to take Kennedy out because of the Bay of Pigs. I'm a hot-blooded Latino myself, and I know Cubans, and I think this is totally, totally credible. Oswald was a patsy. He was in the lunchroom when it happened, where he had been every day for the last X number of months. And he's the only one of all the people tested who did not test positive for gunpowder residue, period. He had no gunpowder residue, and the weapon wasn't the weapon that was used, and there were more than one shooter and more than one shot and so forth. So coming back to 9/11, Rudy Giuliani, Scoop and Dump Giuliani, I have enormous respect for the firefighters in New York. And if the firefighters in New York are pissed off, there's something there. What actually ended up happening, and you know, the question you always ask, regardless of what you know about the circumstances, is who benefits, okay? So I think that, A, Larry Silverstein got an insurance bonanza, and I'm sure was in cahoots with at least some executives in the insurance company, because insurance companies are not stupid. You don't pay out a double terrorism indemnity 2 weeks after the building's been insured without doing a massive investigation. So I think there's actually, this is a money laundering thing. This is an insurance scam, you know, that's, what's that? Well, Building 7 may have been the control building for the remote control override that made sure these assholes hit the building. And there is no evidence that there were actually people on the airplanes. In fact, there's one line of thought that says that this was a combination of directed energy plus a drone. I don't know. What I do know, as a person who reads nonfiction for a living, what I do know is that the 9/11 Commission was a complete whitewash. At best, it was grotesquely incompetent. At worst, it was a cover-up. And what I do know, and Mike, the guy that wrote Crossing the Rubicon, Mike Rupert and I have been having conversations over the phone. I do know that there is more than enough evidence to warrant an indictment in an independent people's commission or Citizens Wisdom Council on all of this.
Is that what Mike Rubel's trying to do now?
I don't know, but I mean, it still needs to happen. You know, 9/11 is probably the crime of the century because no building in history has been brought down by an airplane until 9/11. And you don't pancake. I mean, a building, if it were like that, it would go sideways. And the testimony of the firefighters on the radios and everything is the explosions went from bottom up, okay? So basically 3,000 people were murdered by American officials. And I suspect that Giuliani was the only person in New York City in the know. And it's one of the reasons the Republican Party treats him with kid gloves. Giuliani apparently had already orchestrated the trucks, each with a GPS system to keep track of the stuff. He scooped and dumped a lot of gold and other valuables that were insured. There's no evidence that they were in the rubble. And a whole lot of SEC files got destroyed. So when you ask yourself the question, who benefits? And you look at all of this, and there's a whole bunch of other stuff. I mean, my second book, what? Well, the Patriot Act, nobody, nah, you know, yeah, Bush benefited, but yeah, but yes, you're right. But I think this was more than the Patriot Act. This was the neocon agenda. If you want to understand the neocon agenda, there's a wonderful book called Endgame, Winning the War on Terror by General McInerney and a couple of other real morons. And these are the guys who think they can nuke their way through the Middle East. It's just not working for me. But I want to say that in my second book, I have a section on 9/11, what happened and why. And you had a number of intelligence failures and policy failures. For example, 9/11, the FBI had two walk-ins, one in Newark, New Jersey, and one in Orlando, Florida, both well in advance of 9/11. And both of them wanted to tell the FBI about the 9/11 plot. And the way the FBI mentality is, when they're busy not opening computers that they've captured, the FBI mentality is if you tell us names and those names are not in our file, you must be a fabricator. This is how stupid they are, okay? So we had two walk-ins. We had a guy in a German jail calling every single day for a week prior to the event. As I said, we had at least nine governments tell us. So bottom line for me is that 9/11 was allowed to happen. By the way, the Crisis Command and Control Center is in the World Trade Center. So why do we need one on the pier in New York? All right. Obviously, we know that we're not going to be able to use the one that's in the World Trade Center. Okay. And Dick Cheney, if you go back, I mean, there are two books on Dick Cheney that I highly recommend. One is called The 1% Doctrine. The other is called Vice, Dick Cheney and the Hijacking of the American presidency. I generally don't mention books that I haven't reviewed, because I don't know them. It's not that I'm pushing myself. I'm just saying, you know, there's reviews there. And my reviews are summative. For example, my review of the second book itemizes the 25 high crimes and misdemeanors that Cheney has committed. Two simple examples. Colin Powell succeeded in getting the North Koreans to accept our terms. And Cheney said, well, that's not what I want. And he put more onerous terms down that drove the North Koreans away from the table. Had I been Powell, I would have told Cheney to fuck off and gone public. The Iranians used the Swiss to approach the U.S. government in 2003, saying, look, we'd like to calm everything down in the region. We're ready to negotiate. Everything's on the table. Cheney threw out the offer and chewed out the Swiss for daring to bring it to us. Okay, I mean, Cheney is a nakedly amoral criminal. And sadly, the International Red Cross is now about to come out publicly and say that the U.S. is guilty of war crimes. And this is Cheney, Bush, our generals.
And Big Oil has benefited the most from
it. Well, yes. But, you know, again, I come back to hold the power of information. You know, why is it that I'm the only guy going around saying that Exxon didn't make $40 billion in profit? Why isn't CNN doing this? Okay, I mean, we know about ownership and stuff, but what we have to do is we have to push all of this out. So, no, you're never going to put 9/11 to rest just the way we weren't able to put JFK to rest until the truth finally came out. Truth actually does have a tangible value in the long run. And I think, this going back to these Truth and Reconciliation Commissions, it's not possible to be a great nation on a foundation of lies. And America right now is a cheating culture. That's the name of a book that I've reviewed. It's a cheating culture. We have really managed to basically commit intellectual and emotional and civic suicide since Vietnam. That's a shame. Yes, sir.
I was wondering what you know and how do you feel about Osama bin Laden being a CIA asset with a code name Tim Osman, as well as Dick Cheney running the North American Air Defense Drill Valiant Warrior on the morning of 9/11 when he has no affiliation with that agency?
Right. Okay, those are two good questions. Everyone heard them? All right. Number one, I believe my CIA colleagues when they say that we did not fund bin Laden. Bin Laden was a self-funded, Saudi-funded capability that went into Afghanistan. And in fact, he had a lot of issues in Afghanistan because they were Arabs. And the people in Afghanistan and Pakistan are not Arabs. And so there was this conflict between Arab Islam and non-Arab Islam. I will also tell you that Mike Scheer, each book he publishes comes closer and closer to saying bin Laden's right and we're wrong. In other words, bin Laden's problem is with our presence in the Middle East and the despotic Saudi royal family, which consists of 60,000 assholes who live at public expense and basically you can kidnap a B-list movie star for about $50,000 and she's put on the Saudi Learjet and she's gone forever by name.
I mean, that's really interesting. It's just, I've read the declassified federal document from the FBI warning the CIA not to go, the CIA to the FBI not to go after Osama bin Laden because he is a CIA asset.
Really?
By the name of Tim Osman. Yes, it's on federaljack.com in our ebooks archive.
I'd love to have the URL. My email address is bear@oss.net.
We'll email you that right now.
I'd love to have the URL. Everybody can be a CIA asset in one way or another. I know bin Laden was visited by a CIA station chief when he was in the hospital.
In the morning, 9/11. Yeah,
but it's in general, the CIA's biggest mistake in the Middle East was to allow the Saudis and the Shah and others to say, you can't talk to our dissidents. So CIA was basically cut down. When the Iranians took over the embassy in Tehran, they captured the four CIA guys that were there, and they were seriously pissed off for two reasons. Only four? And none of you speak Farsi? Who the fuck do you think we are, Somalia? Okay? I mean, CIA is not serious in a lot of these places. Today, CIA is puppies, okay? And it's tragic. But going back to the second part of your question, which
was Dick Cheney's involvement with the Valiant Warrior.
I think that was a carefully calculated plan. It was actually a government-wide exercise. It was a government-wide exercise. It had a scenario of planes crashing into the NRO. It was a government-wide exercise that allowed Dick Cheney to keep his control over the entire government. It allowed him to move the Strip Alert aircraft out of the Eastern Coast. There is a very well-established protocol for dealing with aircraft that go off course. And at no time in history until 9/11 had NORAD ever failed to intercept such an airplane within 15 minutes.
In 2000, they had 67 intercepts with 100% accuracy.
Right, exactly. So the literature is quite clear here. There is something wrong with this picture.
Well, yes. I mean, my smoking guns I am a firm believer that 9/11 was a false flag operation as a pretext to go to war with Iraq and to create the Patriot Act, Victory Act 1-2 police state in the U.S. Eventually, by 2012, through Operation Endgame, through the Department of Homeland Security, a North American union inevitably to be a one-world government. However, the reason why I feel this way is because of the NORAD implications with Dick Cheney, as well as he was one of the architects of Project of a New American Century, which called for a new Pearl Harbor.
Right. Let's downplay this because I want to get to a lot of other questions. I think I'll meet you halfway. This has to be investigated. It was a let it happen. There were crimes committed against Americans that are just absolutely abysmal. I was talking to a lady that talked. All right. So let's move on from this.
Thank you very much.
I'm interested in your URL. Does anyone have another question over here?
I just have a quick question, if there's any hackers still left in the room. What information do you need or would you like?
Her phone number. No. that's a great question. What information do I need or do I want? Well, if you could scrub the Earth Intelligence Network, I mean, I'm not very good at website promotion and stuff like that. I mean, my wife is really pissed off at me because I've spent my profit from the last 2 years creating a nonprofit, which turned out to be exactly the right thing to do. The last $8,000 I had left, I spent publishing this book and taking my name off it, and that turned out to be exactly the right thing to do by divine providence. I want to give your question very, very careful thought. In 1992, I ran the first conference on open source intelligence, and CIA said, we'll come, but only if it's secret U.S. citizens only. And I had to say, what part of open source don't you understand? And fortunately, Admiral Studeman, as a fellow naval officer, allowed me to gain an audience. And I said, sir, this is nuts. And he ordered them to attend. And then after he retired, open source intelligence became known within CIA, including its own open source people who are mediocre menopausal grandmothers and young white kids. It became known as open source, S-O-R-E-S. I think that the whole idea, it's not what I need, it's what we need. The whole idea here is we need to create a Citizen Intelligence Minuteman Corps. And the problem that we've had, and I'll tell you what I told the hackers in 1994. You know, I understood what was happening. I understood that people were finding vulnerabilities, and I understood that there were good hackers and bad hackers and stuff. I said, look, you've got to create a website. You've got to basically, when you find a vulnerability, you go to the company very discreetly and privately, you tell them the vulnerability, you offer suggestions on the fix, and if they haven't fixed it in 30 days, then you go public. Okay? And, of course, you guys didn't listen to me then. Or the generation.
They freaking arrest you if you do that. You get sued. They come after you with both cup and barrels.
Well, yeah, that's an absolutely reasonable thing to say, and that's why my website's based in Sweden. okay. I mean, I hear you, but that's not good enough. But I also understand, because Bruce Sterling wrote Hacker Crackdown, and I've testified in writing against Secret Service lies against hackers. I mean, you got to understand, these guys lie because they don't know. It's not that they're bad. They just don't know. So anyway, what I think we really need, is the blogging of this meme of Citizen Intelligence Minuteman. I mean, we're trying to set up a system right now where we will train anybody for free so that they can become their county or municipality intelligence officer. And I've had to stop it briefly because I've been using up life savings because my for-profit business was killed by the war. It was taxed out of existence as funds were redirected, so I no longer have a multi-million dollar business. And so I'm technically unemployed. But for a while there, for about 2 years, we were publishing a weekly report called Global Challenges, The Week in Review. And we've been doing this worldwide survey, and we've got this wonderful access database and open source center in Australia. That's where my nonprofit stuff is based, my for-profit ops centers in Sweden. And we were publishing a report which basically in 8 pages, the top page was a one-line summary of what had happened in each of the 10 threats, 12 policies, 8 demographics. And then each of the succeeding 8 pages had like 2 or 3 headlines for each of the 10 threats, 12 policies, so forth. And our next big step is to tie this to budgets and to start publishing what we're spending on terrorism and poverty and infectious disease and so on. So we've got a lot of work to do, but we've been investing heavily. Someone else has been investing heavily, and we're about 85%. If you guys want to see the future, go to scout.com. And then imagine that applied to every single topic on the planet. Okay? Scout.com. What it's about is end-user-generated content. All right? So what I want to do is get to a point where all of the citizens of Westchester County are essentially online. They're feeding stuff up, including handheld photos with GPS coordinates. In Taiwan right now, they're paying money to citizens who take pictures of corporate pollution and then send it in with a little template note. So they've harnessed the distributed intelligence of all of their citizens. So I guess, and I'm trying to be very unselfish here, I guess what we really need is we need for this meme of public intelligence and the public interest to get out there. Dig it, whatever. I don't blog, really. I've got a blog, citizensparty.com. I don't have a lot of time for it. And I don't spend a lot of time or money on trying to make Earth Intelligence Network very popular. But the thing that would really make my heart sing is if people started taking responsibility for keeping their government accountable by using public intelligence to educate others and to then show the lunacy and the idiocy and the graft and the corruption that permeates our entire governance system.
We should get you a TED Talk. Because
what's
then you,
that?
We should get you a talk at TED. Because
well, you
then
know,
you're reaching like a couple of thousand, you know, internet millionaires.
It's funny you mention that because I think TED knows who I am and they're not yet sure whether I'm a lunatic or a genius.
They're quite apolitical, so maybe you need to rewrap the message.
Well, I would be honored to be invited to speak at TED. I've seen others that they've spoken at. By the way, I highly recommend the TED website where you can see the videos of people who have spoken. Barnett, who wrote a really shitty book, has matured tremendously since then. And I was very impressed by his TED briefing. And I went back and modified my review to say it's still a shitty review, but this guy has really evolved. And so forth. Another question. Thank you for asking that question.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. This is going to be a little bit more meta, and I hope not too far out.
I love meta.
Left field, but you know, a lot of the problems that everyone here has talked about in many of these conferences seems to have to do with the fact that human institutions at a certain point in time, whether it's because they become too big or too old,
right,
they start sort of collectively self-selecting towards, you know, self-serving,
right,
insular,
right,
slash evil behavior,
right, right.
And I wonder if you've looked into, you know, looking at behavioral models of self-organization and you know, whether or not you see any validity towards, you know, applying mass behavioral models in some way to, you know, provide scrutiny or incentives against, you know, what may, you know, the ethical decay of organizations.
Yeah, that's a very good question. A couple of angles on it. Number one, the Weberian concept of bureaucracy and the whole pyramidal organization of the industrial era was based on a time when information was difficult to get and hoarding information was, in fact, a source of power. Now we're moving through pyramidal, away from pyramidal, towards squares and then circles. And there's a literature on that. And there's a chapter in here by Jean-François Nubel, who's one of the gurus of collective intelligence on that. And Jim Roth has experimented with citizen wisdom councils. I mean, I don't know if you know the Danish have what they call a Danish citizens council, where if there's a really major issue that Denmark wants to consider, such as whether or not to allow genetically altered crops into Denmark, they get 12 Danish citizens whose only requirement for the job is that they know nothing about the subject at hand. And then they are turned into a kind of supreme court. And they are allowed to call witnesses, and they're allowed to grill them, they're allowed to subpoena them, they're allowed to basically force them to provide evidence and so forth. And then at the end of it, this council deliberates and it comes up with a conclusion, and that's briefed to Parliament, and that's it. It's over. The citizens have decided. So one of the things that we're really struggling with, and I think many of these big businesses are starting to realize this, the smart money, I mean, look at what Schwab did. It spun off an electronic thing which then ate the parent. That was a good move. One of the things that's a real problem here, and John Bogle has a book, The Battle for the Soul of Capitalism. Basically, America is no longer an ownership society. We've spent the last 20 years creating financial derivatives and hedge funds and all of this stuff. And what Bogle says, and he's one of the top money managers on Wall Street who's now retired in Pennsylvania, he says that essentially the money managers, the financial guys, have stolen one-fifth of the value of all of the stuff they've been managing. They've basically ripped off all of the people. You know, and these are guys that are pulling down $300 million paychecks plus $500 million bonuses. I mean, Perot took his money out of the stock market and prior to the crash in the 80s because he said any industry that pays a 27-year-old $1 million a year has got to be nuts. And I think that's true. So the industrial era no longer works. Now, Kirkpatrick Sale, you remember Schumacher's book, Small is Beautiful. Kirkpatrick Sale wrote a book called Human Scale. And we're right now at a point where there are two complementary new directions. New direction number one is home rule, eat local. If you want to do business in our county, you have to opt out of corporate personality liability protections and that kind of thing. The other is global assemblages. And we're not talking North American Union or world government or whatever. We're simply talking global assemblages. And so you're ending up with this cross-cutting matrix. And I just finished reading David Weinberger's book, Everything is Miscellaneous. It's a really fine book. Weinberger, by the way, is one of the top guys on Open Spectrum. He says everything is miscellaneous. And the whole point of his book is that structured databases are history. And that the reason you want to be able to have a completely unstructured web is because it allows that same piece of information to fit within multiple matrices, okay? And so I think we're getting very, very close to where people can opt out of the bad and opt into the good. For example, I commend to all of you the World Index of Environmental and Social Responsibility, as well as the Intera Project. If you get hold of the Intera Project, they'll come in, they'll work with a local bank, they'll create a local credit card that then gives back to the community. And there are also credit cards and other means by which you can kind of register your social values. And if you then go to buy something that was created by sweatshop labor, the card will be declined. You know, I mean, that kind of stuff. I need to take a break. But I'm coming back. So please allow me to just go to the bathroom, and then I will be back, and I will not leave until I've signed every book that you wish or sold every book that we can.
I hope that you can use that for good luck or whatever.
Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe. $250 billion. All right, time out. I'll be back in no more than 5 minutes. Pleasure. Bye-bye. Yeah, I know some of you have to catch the train, and some of you drove in so that you could get back. That's wonderful. What's going on? Are we filming? Okay. Okay, that sounds good. Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I wanted to ask
about... Louder.
Hi, you made a remark on Friday that really intrigued me about that... one of the biggest uncovered stories right now was the electricity blackouts and brownouts. And I think it particularly struck me because I was here in 2006 when, you know, much of New York lost power for, it's in some places for up to almost 2 weeks, which was so striking. And I just wish you would elaborate more on that and also maybe recommend a few books or... articles or whatever.
Well, what's striking to me is that everything that's happening to us now was easily anticipated decades ago. And I forget the exact quote, but apparently somebody said that the beginning of the collapse of civilization would be the beginning of the spread of blackout spots. You know, and we've had accidental blackouts. For example, a city in New Zealand lost power for an entire 5 weeks, the entire city, because their main power cable just fused into itself, and it took that long to fix it. NSA is now trying to build its own power generator, which I will suspect is going to be nuclear. Because it can't rely on the grid. Now, if I were president, I'd say, wait a minute. How about I just take away your budget and we make the grid work? So this is kind of idiocy here. But what is happening now, and people, it's subtle, but apart from crashes, I mean, like the East Coast crash that was caused by a Canadian tree that hit, you know, whatever, apart from crashes and accidents, we have an extremely fragile infrastructure. there are basically 18 generators in the United States, and if you take out the Hoover Dam and you manage to take out one of the spares, and then you go burn down the German factory that makes them, the United States is in a hurt locker. Yeah, 18 major power generation sources. Like Hoover Dam. I guess. I don't know what I mean. I heard it from someone else.
I got you now.
All right.
I get you now.
Okay. The bottom line is we're very, very vulnerable. And we have an entire society that is based on the assumption of cheap, unlimited energy. And so as a result, you've got this entire city is made of buildings that were designed on the assumption that the windows would never open. And it was designed on the assumption that the elevators would always work. You know, it's wrong. As a matter of fact, when you add computers and you add all the other things that are coming online, we're now burning out the wires. In fact, in Iraq, I was talking to some civil affairs guys, we made a huge mistake. It used to be that the dam would feed most of the power to Baghdad, and the outer cities were kept down. Well, some good-hearted American engineer decided to be more equitable, and he sent equal amounts of power out, and he fried all the lines, okay, going out to the hinterlands, because they weren't designed to take more power than they had already been established for. So we have an infrastructure that's very vulnerable. I'll tell you, the infrastructure that concerns me most is water. There's a book called Blue Death, and what it basically says is we've relied forever on chlorine as the basis for municipal water purification. Never mind the fact that it's wonderful to have chlorine tanks you can blow up and really fuck up neighborhoods with. But the chlorine's not working. And so if you don't have a point of sale kind of filter, you're actually at risk of your own water, Giuliani water. Okay, in Russia, they have a worse problem. In Russia, they laid down the water pipes and then they put the sewage pipes on top in the same ditch. Yeah, and now all those pipes are cracking and the Russians are drinking shit. Yeah, right. So what I would say is that if I made a round-the-world tour at my own expense in 1994, and I made a cold call on the Singapore National Computer Board and a bunch of others all over the world. The only country on the planet that listened to me was Singapore. And today, Singapore is the world's first smart nation. They really do get it. And they're followed closely, without much help from me, by the Nordics, Denmark, Norway, Finland, and Sweden. And then next up would be the Netherlands. In some ways, but the Netherlands hasn't gone as far as I would have expected. Yeah, I know, but the thing is, I only talk to clever Dutch, you know, so they're constantly faking me out. By the way, I liked your presentation very much. It was really, really excellent. So we're rapidly getting to a point where we should expect basic amenities to start to degrade. There's a wonderful book called The Long Emergency. And, I mean, I wish now that I had cashed out of the Washington, D.C. area 4 years ago, sold our house, sold my little office townhouse, and basically moved to Vermont. But my family didn't want to, and I may yet return to government. And so we're standing pat right now. Whoever the next president is going to have to redefine Homeland Security. Charlie Allen, the Undersecretary for Intelligence and Analysis at Homeland Security, is the senior member of my very small fan club in Washington. I've managed to alienate just about everybody there. But he only focuses on terrorism. Whereas Homeland Security requires intelligence and analysis about poverty and infectious disease and environmental degradation and, I mean, development standards. We should put a stop to all development in floodplains. Florida is now in really deep shit. Time just did a wonderful cover story on Florida. I mean, when you start drinking salt water out of the tap, you have a problem. And so these things are spreading across the nation. And unfortunately, and I didn't realize this until I read Hunting with Jesus, unfortunately, it's not just the elite in Washington that is totally out to lunch and not working in the public interest. It's the little micro-elites in every small town across America. Okay, they're screwing over their local populations, they're selling out to corporations, and the very thing that could save us, an educated citizenry, is not being created. Okay, yes, sir. Do you have a microphone?
I guess I do. On the note of corporations, do you agree that one of the best things that we could do would be the systematic cleansing of anything to do with a corporate product in our lives? You know, Coca-Cola and Heineken's and all those things that are produced by corporations as much as we possibly can.
Are you saying that we need to move immediately to homebrew?
Not immediately, but as much as possible.
Well, you know, let me dissect that on several levels. Naomi Klein is a real genius, and I love her books, No Logo and Shock Capitalism. I think she's really made a huge contribution. It's funny, because when I go out to Seattle, I like to tease the natives by walking around with a soda can, because they really get it out there. And they have these little sipping cups, you know, that are sustainable. And they refill them, and then they sip from them, and so no plastic bottles. It takes more water to make a plastic bottle than it carries, okay? So at one level, it's the whole packaging issue. At another level, it's the whole nutrition issue. At a third level, it's the whole labor fairness issue. I mean, if I were president, if you're not a member of a labor union, you're out of here. Okay? I mean, everybody should be a member of a labor union or a professional association. We have lost it with respect to the rights of labor and citizens and so forth. What's that?
Reagan was the first one to sort of start
wrecking. Oh, yeah. When he broke the back of the air traffic controller strike, that was the beginning of the end of American labor. And that was very, very wrong. And the military people, again, I have this real problem with the military people as a Marine Corps officer. They tend to confuse loyalty to the chain of command with loyalty to the Constitution. Because a properly educated general would have known that using the military to break the back of an American strike was the equivalent of violating the Posse Comitatus Act.
Correct.
Okay? It was using labor rather than arms, but it was violating the rights of American labor on American soil.
Absolutely.
And they should never have been allowed to get away with that.
No
okay,
yeah.
So I believe that we are caught between a rock and a hard place, because most people are earning a living, apart from the free and independent spirits in this room, most people are earning a living as part of the beast, and they rely on the beast for their paycheck. And so we don't have a migration strategy. Yes, sir, with a microphone.
In harmony with that, one thing that would seem that we could do almost immediately is change the corporate charter, which, you know, dictates that by law they must always maximize shareholder value, or it's against the law. And the other thing is remove their standing under the 14th Amendment as a person.
Well,
and make
certainly,
them totally
yes.
liable.
Yes. No, you're absolutely right. The 14th Amendment was intended, I think, for freedmen for freedmen of color to assume their proper standing in society, and it has been grotesquely abused by corporations. I absolutely agree with that. However, I also agree with changing the corporate charter, and that's why we're starting to see the emergence of hybrid organizations that are a combination of corporation and nonprofit, and people are starting to realize that the triple bottom line, social, environmental, and profit. Now, I would have a more simple change to the corporate charter, which is to say you will show the IRS the same books you show your stockholders, okay? Because right now they have triple and quadruple books. I did my first. Yeah, basically corporations have a tax return which says we didn't make any money this year. And then they pay dividends,
okay, right, okay.
Saying we actually did make a little bit of money. There's actually a third set of books which says we didn't make any money, we made a little bit of money, and oh, by the way, our Cayman Islands bank account is now, you know, plussed up by $500 million. Yeah, I mean, Halliburton paid $15 million in taxes on billions in profits. about 4 or 5 years ago, whenever the data was from. Let's use the microphone. So yes, I think cleansing corporations is certainly a big part of it, and I think boycotts, not buying the wrong stuff and buying the right stuff, is certainly a big part of it. I mean, if you look at my closet, I have way too many shirts, way too many T-shirts. When I was growing up in Singapore, my cook's sons, who were very industrious students, they had 2 white shirts and 2 pairs of pants, and then I think 1 set of kind of like casual clothes, a pair of jeans and a T-shirt. And that was it. And they never, ever looked disheveled or whatever, you know, whatever. It's possible to get through life with just 2 sets of clothes. Okay, using the microphone.
So which do you think either of those are plausible, or which is more plausible than the other? Cleansing out that from our lives from our side, or changing the charter and the amendments and how it's abused?
Oh, it certainly from our side is the first. One of the fascinating things for me is there's something called ScanBack, which allows a third-party tool. You can take a picture of a barcode and send it to Amazon, and they'll send you back the price of that product if you buy it from Amazon. Now, once you have that two-way channel established, there's no limit to what you can get back through that channel. So I anticipate the day coming when you'll be shopping for a T-shirt and you'll, or a designer shirt or whatever, and it'll come back to you and say, yeah, this has 1,500 liters of water from the growing of the corn through the flushing of the chemicals. It was brought in from China, so it's got 6 gallons of fuel in it. And it was made by 10-year-old boys in forced labor camp, you know, whatever. That's kind of a little off-putting. And then you can say, all right, well, either I'm not going to buy today, or what would you recommend? And then it would say, well, over here is this organically grown T-shirt from Louisiana that has minimal chemicals in it and, you know, is cheaper. Okay, so there's information is going to play a role in our lives like nobody would believe, even a group as advanced as this. And I'm very, very excited by that. Yes, sir.
On the vein of information, as well as talking about presidents and where corporations are telling communities what to do, should we be starting from the top up or from top down or from the bottom up? Because there's a lot of small communities. I've worked with enough electrical inspectors in various towns and cities to know that information between small towns does not get around. There's a lot of people reinventing the wheel or just doing it their own way.
That's a really interesting question. First off, bottom up is the answer. Epoch B leadership is bottom up. Let me see. I've got a slide here that shows it. But you also raise the interesting question of sharing best practices. Part of the reason that I put so much effort into Earth Intelligence Network was because I realized that the do-good movement is even more fragmented than the do-bad movement. Okay? It's just all over the lot. And we're not talking to each other, and we're not sharing information. And if you take something like poverty, let's take poverty in County X of State Y. There's 100 different government organizations doing anti-poverty stuff, sometimes in conflict with each other. And there's these do-good organizations doing anti-poverty stuff, sometimes in conflict with each other. I have a vision one day for a global range of gifts table. This is what the foundations call. You know, the range of gifts is naming rights for the building or the toilet paper or whatever. I anticipate a day when it will be possible to identify the needs down to the household level of every family on the planet. And at that point, we will start seeing peer-to-peer foreign assistance. And we will start seeing the creation of new forms of community. It turned off on me. Let me get it back up because this is a fun slide. So the short answer is all of the above. You've got to do everything all the time. My third book was called All Information, All Languages, All the Time. And one of the problems that I have with the entire information industry is that it's trying to pretend that, A, you need proprietary enterprise solutions, which this group certainly knows you don't. It's trying to pretend that there is a technical alternative to thinking, which there isn't. It's trying to pretend that structured hierographic... that man behind you wants the microphone. It's trying to pretend that structured organizations and command and control architectures are this thing went to sleep on me. This is a good deal, by the way. Dell 750 with XP. Dell is the only one that broke ranks, because I told the Undersecretary General of the United Nations, the Director of OMB, and the Director of National Intelligence, as soon as I heard about Vista about a year ago, year and a half ago, I sent them each an email. And I said, don't let anybody buy Vista. And they ignored me. And so today, across campuses across America, kids are tearing their hair out thinking their parents are stupid. what the hell's wrong with this thing?
What you can do is just install Vista on all those machines and tell people it's, or install Ubuntu and tell them it's Vista.
Why did you try to install a program?
Well, yeah, exactly. No, what I did was I called around and I went to Best Buy. They were locked into Vista. They weren't even allowed to ship without Vista. Dell was the only one that broke ranks. Dell, I said, I'm not buying this unless it's got XP on it. And I'm still waiting for an easy open source combination.
Dell now sells it with Ubuntu, actually.
Really? That's good. That's very good. That's a good start. But the next thing we need is all the analytic tools. And I'm trying to figure out why the hell this damn thing won't turn on.
I'd like to really see. And I'm sure it's out there.
Wait. You're not using the microphone.
No,
he's got a question. No, you got to stop.
Yeah, I was going to go in a different direction than laptops.
Okay, go ahead.
Question for you. A number of years ago, coming out of high school, I went through the ASVAB. Tested pretty high. I think everybody in the room probably would. And they're like, well, what do you want to do? You want to go through boot camp? You want to come out and do military intelligence? I'm like, wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. But my ethics are I don't want to be a war maker. Is there a role for peacemakers in the armed forces?
Yes. In fact, Colonel Ferd Irizarry is the first active duty colonel ever assigned to run an active duty civil affairs brigade. He's General Schumacher's last gift to America was to create the Army Civil Affairs Brigade. It has a battalion for each region, and it is under the oversight of the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Special Operations and Low-Intensity Conflict /Irregular Warfare. That's Army code. Irregular warfare is Army code for waging peace, okay? And Colonel Irizarry and I have had a number of wonderful conversations. Because
check the screen, I don't know.
What we've realized is that, you know, an ounce of prevention is a pound of cure. The problem is, yeah, what the hell's going on here? Here, you take it. Well, wait. Oh, I see. I just can't see. Okay, I'm with you now. So why can't I? No. Okay, you guys want to play Pong? Okay, fuck you too, machine. All right, this is Gates. All right, we'll get it back. We'll get it back because I have some cool slides.
This is working.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, read the computer thing. What I'd really like to see, and I know it's kind of there, but not for most people, would be a version of a Linux-based OS that looks and feels reasonably pleasant, but also lets you install stuff without being a total Linux geek.
I agree completely. If you want, we'll talk more about civil affairs. But the future, I believe. In fact, I lectured to parliamentarians in Europe at Garmisch-Parmesan at the George Parmesan, whatever, at the George Marshall Center. And I talked about having a core force. Colin Powell's base force was a force for war. The core force is communications, unclassified intelligence, and global mobility. It's the infrastructure. And what is happening now is that the rest of the U.S. government can't mobilize. The cabinet departments are not geared up to send people to Somalia or to Burundi or whatever. And so what I see happening here is, over time, I anticipate a white hat military that becomes the core force so that, for example, when East Timor happened, Question number one was, where are the bodies? Question number two was, where can we land? And question number three was, who's coming with what? And how do we coordinate with them? And nobody could answer that. There were like 40 different intelligence analysis groups working on this problem. I anticipate the day coming when something like the tsunami in Thailand happens, and the military literally is there in 6 hours with the first team and then second team, third team piled on, and they become the command. They become not the command and control club, the information sharing and sense making hub, and the final coordinator for logistics. And everybody coming into the area feeds in what they're bringing and when and how and who to talk to, and they all come in and they use Toozl. T-O-O-Z-L. I'm going to go pick up a couple of files. I'd love for you guys to take Toozl on and put it on steroids. Because Toozl is a set of tools that fit on a thumb drive that can immediately have you up and running within a local area network anywhere in the world. So DARPA funded this under Strong Angel. And it's definitely cool. So civil affairs is where I think the future is going to be in terms of waging peace. And we're all going to have to be very active as citizens, because the reality is, when I signed up to pay taxes, I didn't sign up to have my taxes directed toward waging war. You know, that's where Ron Paul really shines, peaceful commerce with all nations. And I think over time we need to do this. Is there a way for me to get back my own screen function? All right, now I took it away. Okay, good. There we go. Come on. There we go. Okay, good. I'm going to bring up the briefing I gave earlier. It's got a couple of good slides in it. And see, with Earth Intelligence Network, what I've been trying to do was create a frame of reference for citizens to talk to. We also have this idea of a policy budget outreach online thing. So that the idea here is that with volunteer labor, every single budget at every level, the national budget, you guys can all go to the national online simulation. The problem with the national online simulation is, although you can create my budget, you can't enter into dialogue with everybody else. Because what you really want to be able to do is create my budget. I'm a libertarian from zip code 22124. And then that allows you to immediately see the aggregate budget distinctions between all libertarians, Republicans, Democrats, and others. And then it allows you to go into an open space and talk about trade-offs in relation to actual constraints on resources. I love this slide. My son made this.
While you mentioned resources, do you notice any similarities between the current energy crisis, oil crisis, and I guess the electric crisis California had?
Hold on. That was just pure corruption. Here's Toozl, which I recommend to all of you. It would be a really cool project to take on Toozl and make it a, like he says, an easy-to-use tool that allows for, hang on. Let's see, where is my, this was this morning's brief. Okay, I think I've got a slide of analytic toolkits here. There. Okay. In 1986, Diane Webb, a redhead 4 foot off the deck, thought of this. Only she thought of it in the old way, the pyramidal way. And these are all of the technology aids that we need on a standard citizen's desktop. I mean, the ones at the top are ingestion and conversion capabilities. The ones in the middle are modeling, simulation, you know, visualization, anomaly detection, and so forth. Well, that's actually down in the second link. And then finally, the last one is sharing and sense-making among peers. We don't have this today. We don't have this today because Bill Gates has been migrating and mutating his application program interfaces to discourage innovation on the edge of the network. And we don't have this today because Google doesn't want you to know that they're stealing everything they touch and they want you to have their analytics in their own good time. Okay? I think Grub, distributed search, you know, that's all possible. In my view, when we create information, if we had Cisco AON, application-oriented network, it's a form of content-based management and control. You can change rules in a nanosecond worldwide. But basically, your computer should have a Cisco AON outlet or something like it. You should be able to control your own information. You should be able to determine who sees what. You should be able to audit who sees what. You should be part of a global distributed network where the information resides permanently in your server, nowhere else. It's not mirrored. It's got digital watermarks, the whole bit. We should have had this 20 years ago. I was on the original Advanced Information Application Program Steering Group, and we inventoried the entire intelligence community. We found out that there were over 20 analytic desktop projects. And each of them was a different part of the intelligence community with a different vendor with whom they had a sweetheart relationship with. And none of them had standards. None of them had even done a functional requirements analysis. I may be one of the only people on the planet that's actually done an end-to-end functional requirements analysis for an analytic workstation at CIA. And I think it's posted on my website. So this is what we need in open source software. So we need Toozle to be able to do all of this. And also, there have to be back-end and reach-back centers. One of my dreams is to persuade the Chinese and the Indians that they need to put homework help on steroids and basically have a national call center. They hand out free cell phones, first to every village, then to every neighborhood, then to every household, like Gillette. You sell the shave, not the razor. So give away the cell phone, monetize the analytics. How cool is it if 16 different farmers call in with a disease, a picture of a disease, and your call center has that plotted? Or how cool is it if 17 people call in with symptoms of SARS? You know, I mean, what we're talking about here is turning the cell phone into the national planet pulse taker. And I think that's where Nokia's going. Nokia's very, very smart. They've got this one guy that, what a dream job. He travels all over the world taking photos of people in their natural habitats. And what he's thinking about is how can a cell phone change the way this person does business? And that was precisely the point I was trying to make to Interval in 1993. I was invited to give a Friday afternoon rant, and the title of it, which is online, it's God, Man, and Interval. And what I was saying was, if you can't change the life of an Indian woman with a child, you're shit. And instead, they were into holograms and all this other stuff. Let me see if I've got the Epoch B slide up here. This is kind of cool. I think the tide is turning. I think we will be... here we go. This is also known as Epoch B leadership. The problem with McCain and Obama is they haven't learned to listen. They haven't learned to ask the right question. And I tried to help Obama, and then I tried to help McCain. And in McCain's case, I mean, I think McCain's strongest point is he's the only guy that has the stature to basically cut the military in half. And that's something we need to do. I mean, we have to cut the military in half. Who is talking about taking out Iran?
So you can't do both.
No, you're right, but you also, the gentleman says that McCain's talking about taking out Iran. You know, at the end of the day, Iran is not a threat to the United States of America.
Amen.
What's that? The fucking Persians. I'm not being disrespectful, and I hope you know that. All right, so let's say that we have to decide between two village idiots. Well, I'd like that, but Bloomberg won't talk to me. So, I mean, Bloomberg sent me a thank you note, or his staff sent me a thank you note. But I actually put together a binder on Democracy 2008. I've worked with some really smart guys since 2000 to identify. Would you guys like to see a nonpartisan cabinet? Yes? Okay. Then, but this slide here captures what we're about. I love Noam Chomsky. In fact, I'm his replacement. You know, Chomsky got it. Manufacturing, consent. I mean, he really got it long before the rest of us did. But I don't have tenure anywhere. So let me close this down, and I'll bring up the transpartisan cabinet. And, you know, I've been thinking about this since 2000. And I've been working with Michael Cudahy, who was the campaign manager for Barry Goldwater. And I've been working with Jock Gill, who was a communicator for President Clinton, and a whole bunch of other people. And we've come up with a Democracy 2008. This was stuff that I sent to Bloomberg, and it's all available generally online. But here's a coalition cabinet. Now, I don't think I can make this any bigger, can I? Control plus? Okay, there we go. Control plus. Hold on. I got to find the plus. All right. Control what? Oh, like. Yes, I do. Yes, this is a good idea. Somebody come up here and handle this. Did everybody get a pen? Who didn't get a pen?
Do you have a mouse?
No, I don't have a mouse.
Oh, where did you?
Oh, there. Oh, wow.
And then you can use your
A new trick. Okay. I will leave it there, because what really matters is just this column right here. But let me give you my email, because if you find that we've overlooked somebody, I would be very, very glad to have an email to Bear, B-E-A-R, at OSS.net, and in the subject line put HOPE in capital letters as the first word, and I'll be sure to see it. I'd love to have your thoughts on this. But basically, what we did was we put together a slate that was intended to be nonpartisan. And so you have Jim Hightower at Agriculture, Clyde Prestowitz at Commerce, with John Bogle, Sam Nunn at Defense. Well, my view is that no one should be elected president in the future unless they have first announced their cabinet, or at least, you know, a partial cabinet, and second, published a balanced budget of where they intend to take the country. Okay, because right now we're voting people, we're voting for demagogues with pretentious platitudes that are not backed up by reality.
Are you going to keep the Department of Homeland Security?
I'd like to get rid of it. I actually have in my article on presidential strategy, my chapter on presidential strategy in my first book, I believe we need two deputy vice presidents. A deputy vice president for national security who oversees justice, state, and defense together, and a deputy vice president for the Commonwealth who oversees everything else. I also believe we need to change the National Council to create a presidential policy staff, and I have a concept for a director general for policy, a director general for strategy, which we don't have. The world's longest job description was written by David Abshire. It was called Preventing World War III. And it was a book-length position description for a position of counsel to the president for strategy. But I've gone much further than that and thought about how you actually put strategy co-equal with policy, intelligence, and research. So education, Derek Bach, energy, Paul Hawken, Tom Cochran, Stephen Flynn for the time being. But I think, as you say, Homeland Security needs to be phased out. And what we really need to do is think about how do you leverage the Commonwealth. And how do you organize by people, by natural resources, and so forth? Constanza Green, Philip Heyman, Robert Huttner, Colin Powell at State. I think Colin Powell should be either vice president or return to Secretary of State. John Claybrook, Felix Royatin, or someone else. Max Cleland. And then Ambassador to Israel, Jonathan Schnell, who wrote the book Unconquerable World. David Gergen. He's got another job left in him. Mike Hayden, I'm sorry, I have to get him off the list. He's violated the Constitution twice, once with warrantless wiretapping, although the gentleman pointed out in the other session that that's been done since time immemorial, and the second time with rendition. Jim Clapper is a good man. Cockburn, Pat Buchanan. So there you have it. And, you know, this doesn't have to, I mean, I love Carol Moseley Brown. I think she's really a hot lady. Don't go there.
That's why you picked her over
Kucinich? You know, if Kucinich would wash his hair and wear boots, he might do a little better. But nobody in America is going to elect a guy with greasy hair who looks like a runt, no matter how smart he is. I don't know his wife. Do we want lights back or leave them off? Okay, lights are off. You can sleep if you want. Quick time check. It's 3:29. Let's agree that we do end at 4. And then I've been told I need to sign books both here and downstairs. So any more questions? With the microphone, or shall we just stop?
I have one.
Yes, I'm listening.
It's a little different. Do you have any knowledge of a project in Alaska with a field of satellite dishes or
the one that's trying to control the weather?
Yeah, is ripping a hole in the ionosphere. Do you have any information?
Well,
on
there
that?
Is a project in Alaska that's really pissing the Chinese and the Russians off. I forget the detailed name. It's got an H in there. HARP? Yeah, HARP. Right, HARP. H. Two A's. HAARP. Okay, I've read about it. And all I can say is that the arrogance and ignorance of the U.S. government is just absolutely, utterly astounding. And I think it's a really bad idea. I think it needs to be publicized. You know, when I said earlier that I think we need a voice to America, there's a real problem here because the government wants to consider you a traitor if you're willing to listen to other people or to collaborate with other people to get the truth out. What's that?
Especially if they're foreign.
Yeah, especially if they're foreign, especially if they're Venezuelan. The fact of the matter is that Will and Ariel Durant in Lessons of History, which was the capstone volume on their 10 to 12 volume History of Civilization, said that morality is a strategic asset that is priceless. Basically, morality and legitimacy are what allow you to lower the cost of doing business and to optimize the degree to which you can achieve peace and prosperity at the lowest possible cost. And the United States has gotten into a series of political administrations who are shameless. I mean, there's a book called The Trial of Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger murdered 20,000 American soldiers by undermining the Paris peace talks so that Nixon could win, only to accept precisely the same terms 4 years later. One of the concepts that I have is for retrospective impeachments. And I don't mean to impeach in order to punish as much as to warn the current players. We should be impeaching every senator that was a party to ignoring peak oil. We should be impeaching every senator today who is refusing to address our water issues. We should be impeaching every senator today who declines to institute electoral reform. It may be too late for this go-around. I personally think McCain will win. I personally think Obama lost me when he rejected the Reverend, because when the Reverend said, "God damn America," apart from the fact that he was exercising his right of free speech, he was in fact addressing the sucking chest wound in our nation. He was addressing the fact that America is at its weakest when it is at its worst. I didn't know that. Thank you. The gentleman says that he was quoting an American ambassador. So the bottom line here is the Reverend was on solid ground, and when Obama had it right the first time, when he said I could no more reject the Reverend than I could reject my white mother. And then he blew it. He blew it. So HARP needs to be shut down. And in fact, one of the, you know, there's a scientific principle, more honored in the breach than in reality, but it's called the precautionary principle. We, and Charles Perrow wrote a book called Living with High-Risk Technologies, and stop me if I've said this too many times, but simple systems have single points of failure that are easy to diagnose and easy to fix. Complex systems have multiple points of failure that interact in unpredictable ways on the way down and are very, very difficult to fix. We live in a society, a constellation of complex systems all built by the lowest bidder. Okay, so we're in really, really bad trouble. Another question on the microphone.
Okay, it's not really a question, but a comment, but I guess it turns into a question. This whole business with McCain versus Obama. You know, I'll tell you, why do I just get the feeling we're dealing with the old bucket of buzzard puke story, so to speak? It's like deciding which one to take a big drink out of because they're both about
right,
equally
because
bad.
They both represent the two evil parties that are trying to shut out all the other parties and all the other thoughts. That, I agree.
That, but the other thing is, even with that, for some stupid reason, I still can't shake the thought that Obama, with all his faults, and they're there, still seems to be the lesser of the two evils. Now, maybe that's incorrect. I have trouble getting my head around a Republican being a better choice in general, even though it means less than it used to.
Yeah,
admittedly.
No, you know, I share your pain. The reality. The problem that I have with Obama, I mean, I'm 56 years old. And
I'm 45, not that much younger.
Yeah, no, I know, but I've seen rubes come and go.
Yeah.
And Obama, unfortunately, I think he hit it before his time.
That's probably true.
And I will tell you, I got in my car and I drove to Des Moines. How many of you have already heard this story? All right, just a couple. I'll tell you the story. I drove to Des Moines because I believed in Obama's possibilities at the very beginning. And I drove to Des Moines, then I went to his state office, and I tried to get them to pay attention to me, and I pointed out to him I just spent $30,000 trying to get him some higher profile with the media in Illinois, and they blew me off. So I went to the hotel, fairly easy to identify, the campaign hotel, and I was trying to check in, and they said, "I'm sorry, we're literally sold out." And it was a woman of color. And so I said to her, you know, I'm here to try and help Obama, but his staff isn't paying attention to me. He's not reaching out. I mean, for a while there, he was mentioning independents, and he never, ever mentioned libertarians or greens or reforms. And so I said, "I'm here. I'm trying to get through to him, but his staff won't listen. I'm trying to get to him directly." She said, "Just wait a minute." And she went and she put me in one of the two rooms blocked by the Secret Service on each side of Obama's room. And she didn't tell me that she was doing this, but I'm no idiot. I get into my room and I look around and there's a room right across from me where the door is cracked. It's held open by a handkerchief. And no one's looking through the crack, but it's clear to me there are a couple of guys parked in there. I say, "Okay, that's the Secret Service room. This is my room. That's Obama's room." Okay. And so then I went down to the business center and I started preparing a memorandum for him. And by coincidence, a man of color who was on the Secret Service detail was in there also. I said, "Oh, you're with the Secret Service?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Yeah." And I said, "Okay, well, I came here to slip something under Obama's door," which he's supposed to prevent. And I said, "Here's a copy. And here's my Social Security number." And I said, "I'm in the room right next door, and I'm planning to do this later tonight." And he didn't say anything. He certainly did not give me approval, but it was clearly understood. And so later that night, Secret Service never noticed. Could have been a bomb I put under his door. But I put this memo under his door. And he may have glanced at it, but Obama is literally a prisoner of both a campaign staff and a political party, as well as whatever skeletons he has in his Chicago closet. And Obama is, at this point, I believe, what reverends of color have said, a House Negro. And he's making the same mistake that Colin Powell made when he allowed Dick Cheney to run roughshod over American foreign policy. And Powell confused loyalty with integrity. So in my view, Obama has a bright future only if he finds his own voice and only if he separates himself from Dr. Strangelove's like Brzezinski. Brzezinski's the guy that gave us Carter, okay? Brzezinski's the guy that gave the Pakistanis the nuclear bomb. Brzezinski's the guy that's been brain dead for the last 10 years, okay? And Obama knows nothing about foreign policy. He doesn't have, I gave him this structure. I slipped this structure under his door. I said, memorize the 10 threats, memorize the 12 policies, and you'll win this in a walk. And I was blown off by Obama, by David Plouffe, by Axelrod, and by Oprah Winfrey. What's that? The short answer is I'm not sure. In McCain's case, I may go to him personally on the Hill. I faxed it. McCain began to shine. I thought McCain's speech to the NAACP was the first time he really sounded presidential and thoughtful and reasonable. I thought he actually outdid Obama in that particular body. But McCain's problem is that he's surrounded by a small cadre of staff that have come up with him from the Arizona days, that he's comfortable with, that he trusts. I guarantee none of these people are reading books. None of these people have multiple graduate degrees. None of these people have spent their life living overseas. None of these people have ever experienced poverty. None of these people has a strategic framework for analysis. None of these people is capable of reaching out to David Walker and say, hey, McCain needs a balanced budget tomorrow. Yes, sir. On the microphone. Microphone here and then over there. Go ahead.
This is more of a suggestion than anything else. Taking his comment and what he said, if we know that the candidates really suck and we really shouldn't be voting for them, why are we voting for them? Why don't we vote for somebody else? Get rid of the brand loyalty and just vote for somebody
fine.
Else.
Who?
Anybody. Doesn't matter. Enough to say we're done with Republican, done with Democrat. We need somebody else.
Now the system is stacked. Right now the system is stacked. If you don't vote, all you're doing is guaranteeing that one of them will win with someone else's vote.
I'm not saying not to vote. I'm saying vote for somebody else.
I'll tell you what.
Show that there's interest in, you know, Nader. I'm not a big fan of Nader.
Bloomberg.
Cynthia McKinney's my chick.
No, I agree with you, and I'm going to have to go to the bathroom in a few minutes. Look, Bloomberg is on the right track, but I flew to Oklahoma to watch Bloomberg be made a fool of by David Boren. And the others. They had this so-called bipartisan meeting there. And I flew there, and I managed to penetrate the press corps, and I basically got CNN and CBS and a couple of others to understand that bipartisan is the opposite of transpartisan. Okay, transpartisan is the leftist term. Nonpartisan is the moderate rightist term. But I was told that in the private press conference before the public one, several people asked them, hey, you know, this is bipartisan, two parties. What about transpartisan, all the parties? And there was no answer. And Bloomberg sat there on the stage, and I've published a memorandum on this, which is online, about Bloomberg being made a fool of in Oklahoma. Basically, you had the David Boren show, and with the exception of Sam Nunn and Bloomberg, everybody there was a has-been, including Cohen. Okay? Going back to the comment about Obama, if Obama is elected, he will be castrated from day one with respect to national security. He'll end up trying to bring in someone like Sam Nunn, and people are just going to go through the motions, and he is going to be stonewalled every way he goes. He is going to end up finding out that he's got to pick one domestic thing and do that, and he's not going to change the system. McCain may be the same. In my personal view, and I had a slide in there, I would be thrilled if Bloomberg would say that he was not going to run for president, but that he was going to launch a nationwide effort so that his chosen representative would participate in every single one of the presidential debates, and Bloomberg should field a People's Sunshine Cabinet, and that Sunshine Cabinet, working under webcams and online, should create a balanced budget that the people can discuss, And we should do all of this beginning 1 September and ending no later than 15 October. If Bloomberg would pay for that, he will do what Lou Dobbs will never do. He will raise the level of the debate. He will make everybody conscious of all of the issues. He will make these two guys realize what fools they are.
It's the Perot ticket.
Huh?
It's what Ross Perot did. He paid for his own advertising.
No, Ross, yeah, but no, excuse me. Ross Perot was about Ross Perot.
Right.
Ross Perot had no strategy. He had no policy panel. He had no balanced budget. All Ross Perot wanted to do was be Ross Perot. And he fired. He was able to hire the two best political consultants on both sides of the aisle, and they both quit because Ross Perot wouldn't listen. Well, neither does Ralph Nader. Okay? So right now, the dark horse in all of this is Bloomberg. And Bloomberg is reputed to have said with absolute fervor he's not going to run. Why should he run? I mean, it's a shit job. You know, and the fact that George Bush can fill it demonstrates that it's a shit job. He's a joke. All right, listen, I want to stop here. I'm going to go to the bathroom, and then I think when I come back, I'd like to sign the books that need to be signed up here, and then they want me to go downstairs. Is that all right with you guys? All right, thank you. It's been a real pleasure. Bye-bye. And God bless America, right or wrong.
I have one question.
We can get back to America the Beautiful.
I'd like to see it in my lifetime.
Yes, I would too. I'd like to see it in my children's lifetime. Did everybody get a pen?
Yeah.
All right, my pleasure.
We started losing our way after World War II.
What's that?
We started losing our way after World War II.
Yeah. Does anyone have a book that needs to be signed? Okay, come on up. I'm going to go to the bathroom. I'll come back, and then I'll go downstairs.
Thank you.